Okay, Ross Davis, Bill Ray, Yvonne Cruz.
Here.
Christina Miller, David Gibbous.
Here.
Simon Ponder.
Here.
Tanya Walker.
Here. All right, so meeting is in order. Have we had a chance to look at the minutes? Are we going to, anybody want to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve.
Second? Okay. Motion is approved. Have a public comment.
No, they're under present. They're under unfinished business.
Okay.
New business, sorry. There is none.
All right, so we'll go to number four, persons wishing to appear. Okay, moving right along. Unfinished business, approval of the Legacy Park Recognition Program guidelines.
Yes, I am seeking the Rec Commission's approval for the Legacy Park nomination form and guidelines. That's been on the agenda the last couple months. It was emailed out.
Right.
Yeah. That's been so long, I forgot what it was about.
Oh, okay. Sure.
I did have a question, but I forgot what it was. It's been so long. Because there was one comment on there where it seemed like they were just dumping their responsibility, wanting somebody else to be responsible for more or less vetting who's going to go into the legacy.
So Governors West
yeah.
is going to accept the nominations, and they're going to put together a committee from Governors West, so a subcommittee.
A subcommittee is going to do it from the way it was read.
A subcommittee
is doing everything, and they're doing nothing.
Right, but it's a subcommittee of Governors West. It's not the whole board. We can make sure. Do you have a copy?
I don't have a copy.
We can make sure that it's clear that it's a subcommittee of Governors West.
Okay,
yes.
That's fine.
So we'll clarify that.
And then they will take the nominations, which this first time around will include more people. Every other year it will include no more than two. And then those nominations will then get vetted for the criteria they set, and then if they meet that criteria, then they'll go to City Council for final approval.
Okay.
Okay, so we need to vote on that now, okay?
Please.
Anybody would like to make a motion to approve how are we calling it?
I would offer a motion that we approve the structure set up by Governors West.
Was there a name of the document or something?
The Legacy Park Recognition Program Guidelines.
Okay. So you made the motion to approve the guidelines. Anybody want to second that?
I second it.
Okay. And so it is approved.
All in favor.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
So it is official that the Rec Commission is approving the guidelines. Thank you. Okay. New business, Pine Oaks Recharge Park.
Welcome.
You want me to...
Yeah, if you don't mind, that'd be great. My name is Barry Ginn. I am the water resource engineer for the city of Ocala. And we are planning a project at the East 9 Golf Course at Pine Oaks. And we're here tonight to talk to you guys about this, I think, very exciting and important project for the city. But I want to make a couple of introductions. Rachel Slocum, also with the City of Ocala, she is our conservation coordinator. We got Daryl Muse, also with the City of Ocala, he's Assistant Director of Water Resources. Then we've got our consultants from CH2M Hill. We've got Allison Lewis, she's going to be project engineer, and we got Jim Bays, also with CH2M Hill. And they have a short presentation to share with you about the groundwater recharge park there at Pine Oaks.
Take it away, Jim. Great, thanks very much. All right, so I was going to use your projector screen here. Can you see all right over there?
Yes.
The lights. So we're really excited about the Ocala Groundwater Wetland Recharge Park. We've been engaged with this site, the Pine Oaks Frisbee Golf Course, for several years now. It's been an interest of the city's to try to find a way to make this site benefit your water resource planning as well as make something beneficial to the community. I've been working in this area, this topic area of wetland parks, for over 25 years. I've worked on projects in Florida and throughout the world, and I think we're bringing our team expertise to bear on a and bringing you, I think, really the best approach that's possible for this kind of project. So I'd like to just kind of start through the general introduction here. Get my system to work right. This project is really all about trying to improve both the water supply of the city as well as the water quality of the aquifer. The one symptom of the water quality concerns in this part of the state is nitrate pollution of the springs, particularly Silver Springs, where this picture is taken. That nitrate is an excess form of fertilizer, found its way into the groundwater through past practices, agricultural practices over the years, development. All these things seep into the aquifer, and they're creating issues with algae growth and excessive turbidity of springs, as well as higher concentrations. One of those sources in the long run has been wastewater applied to landscapes. Well, one approach to solving that is to treat wastewater through wetlands, constructed wetlands, assimilates the nitrogen and excess nutrients, and then let that water find its way back to the aquifer naturally through groundwater recharge. And when these kind of projects, we are typically building a wetland, but we're recognizing that these kind of public projects really need to serve multiple purposes to justify their purpose to the public in terms of the basis and the reason for the expenditures to build these things. But these kind of projects are generally designed to be parks, and they have multiple user facilities, but just building the wetlands themselves creates habitat for wildlife, and it's significant habitat because the water supply typically comes from wastewater plants where there's always a supply coming, so we have water year-round. The water has nutrients in it, but enough that the system can assimilate. But those nutrients create opportunities for growth of plants. Plants create opportunities for habitat for insects and animals that birds like this one can eat. And that creates a perfect target for people to go and look at. One of the biggest activities one can do in Florida that has a positive economic benefit in the community is bird watching and the nature study. There's a huge multiplier effect of people who's going, spending money to get to a bird watching site, birding, and coming back. And it's strong for the community, and it's strong for the economy in general. But it's all built around the idea of creating a kind of habitat. This project here, the Orlando Wetlands Park, is one of the best and biggest examples of this approach, both in the state and really worldwide. They've built a 1,200 acre wetland to take the wastewater from the city, and they've been managing it as that kind of a system since 1987. It's one of the longest running projects of its kind. And it's paved the way. It's really shown the path for how to build these kind of projects. The kinds of habitats that are built attract wading birds, and of course those are usually typically very aesthetic and very attractive. It attracts people, and the people, you know, are of course either bird watchers or major photographers or just out there to learn about the community. This is one project in the Southeast Florida Green Cay Wetlands, a project we worked on years ago that takes wastewater from Palm Beach County's wastewater utilities and spreads it out in a 100-acre constructed wetland. And it's a significant enough site that it takes hours to walk through there. It's a very big project and one of the better examples. One thing special about this project is that it doesn't do anything but recharge. There's no other discharge from the site. So the kind of thing we're talking about here for the city is to take the wastewater, treat it in the wetland, and let the wetlands just filter it into the groundwater, as I mentioned. This has been done, and Green Cay is one of the biggest examples of this kind that's been done in the state. For the wetland park, we're looking at more similar types of habitats like you see in the Ocala and the Orlando Wetlands Park. There'll be trails, there'll be overlooks, there'll be activities for hikers. One of these kind of projects generally become very popular with Audubon groups, and we fully expect to see similar interest here, and already initial discussions with them have been positive in this regard, really seeing it as a place to provides a focus for the community. But there'll be opportunities for just public use in general for the site. There'll be opportunities for fishing, just hiking, day use of the site. It won't simply be an elite bird watching kind of place. This is an aerial imagery of the site. This is the Pine Oaks Frisbee Golf Course here. Right now, it consists mostly of oak canopies with open fairways. These little ponds here are just storing reclaimed water that is used for irrigation. The green on there is like a duckweed, a small floating aquatic plant. But the idea is to take this significant footprint that you've got and overlay that with a wetland that's designed to more or less flow in this kind of clockwise fashion from being pumped in at the north end and allowed to move down through the site, circle through several different areas that have deeper and shallow marshes, but wrapping itself around and through and in internal to the canopy, the oak canopy that you've got at site. So this is one of the situations where it's not just an open field forever. You've got these remarkable oak stands, and we want to preserve those and fold them into the aspect of the site, make sure that they're complementary. We're complementing already the existing habitats that's there by adding in this new habitat. In so doing, we can create little islands, which are always a good move for creating habitat for birds. And they'll naturally use them for rookery sites, and that'll attract people of interest. Have parking in off the main access to the south here, a bus loading area, a circular area to unload buses for tours coming to the site. Sufficient parking to enable people to walk in at one end and find their way through the trails. There's different types of let me just emphasize a couple things here with this figure. We'll have shallow marshes, and we'll have deeper pools and deeper marshes themselves. And here's the kind of the preserved oak canopy throughout. The idea is that as water is entered, applied to the system, it has to pass through a very shallow marsh. The marsh creates the habitat that and the kind of microbial ecological communities living in the sediments, living in the plant material itself, that assimilate and take up excess nitrate, among other pollutants. So the water that actually finds its way down to the ground has already been assimilated by the plants. We and others and Allison have all shown in projects we've done in the past that the water entering the groundwater is well below state standards. Completely clean water for nitrates compared to what's found there now. So the idea here is that by applying it to the wetland system, it's polishing it, and then it's creating a cleaner water that infiltrates into the ground. Now, that happens in several different kinds of communities, deeper water systems that are like floating leaf, like lily pond type habitats, shallow marshes that are more typical, what we call emergent marshes, the more aesthetic plants like we saw in some of the earlier slides. And there are different depths, and so that means opportunity for a wide range of habitat types, very diverse communities. So the idea is that these different symbols, if you will, stippled throughout the whole site represents that kind of diversity that we'll expect to see there. So taking yourselves at the ground shot now, what it looks like right now, you can see the fairways, the stands that have been maintained and established. And the working thought is to create these fairways, convert them into marshes. And the marshes can be places where people can gather in these gazebos, looking out, protected from the sun and rain that we need, of course, in the summer here, but opportunities to see new vistas that aren't there right now, as well as the habitats that are associated with that. So I'm going to walk through a couple more visuals of other park projects. I've already mentioned a few, but it's often the case people want to know, what are these projects going to look like? You know, what will they smell like? You know, and what will it feel like being out there? So just a quick visual tour. This is the inlet end to the Orlando Wetlands Park, south of Orlando. The water comes in clear. It's like a spring itself. It's coming in straight from their wastewater plant. It's been clarified and treated already to very low levels. We'll have very similar quality water here. And it's being polished by the plants. You can see different kind of plant communities taking up these nutrients as the water moves through the habitat. But what you get right away is a sense that, well, this isn't dirty water, this is as clean as it can be, essentially. You know, it looks already clean, but in fact what we're getting is the nutrients in there that you can't see with additional polishing. These big sites like Orlando create more recreational opportunities than simply just birding, and they're much more than about treatment. they've got these trails, and Orlando in particular has a lot of use for day hikes and off-road biking. It's, as I mentioned, it's a significant birding hotspot. Birding festivals are conducted there every year. They even got this thing called this Pangaea Adventure Racing, you know, where people are doing all kinds of hiking and biking, Ironman kind of trail activities out there. We're maybe a little small on the side of scale of things. Our site here is about 60 acres, of which 30 acres or so will be wetlands. But you get the idea that it's not just a single purpose kind of application. So in Southeast Florida, the Wacotahatchee Wetlands is kind of a landmark, benchmark type of project. Wacotahatchee is a new word that we came up with. It means it's from the Seminole language for creative waters. And the idea is that it's a restoration functionally of what used to be on the landscape, but it's designed to be a park from the start that takes reclaimed water from the Palm Beach County's wastewater plant. Fundamental to that is a big boardwalk that runs through it. It's a 3/4 mile boardwalk loop, and you have to access that from the parking lot to even get there. But it puts you in the middle of a marsh, and it puts you in a place that most people on a daily basis probably wouldn't think they'd want to go to. Why would they go to a marsh? Except for the fact it's full of birds, and it looks great, and it's a beautiful day outdoors. And this site here is so popular now, it's on the local community loves it, and it has had some significant benefits all around. Bird watchers flock to the site, so to speak. There's a whole community built up around the nature study and sharing of photographs taken of birds on the site. The site's designed so you're very close to bird nests and bird rookeries. It's very close to people. You can see these houses in the background. They're right at the edge of this park. Initially, there was a lot of concern by these folks. They're saying, "Oh gosh, what's going on here? What's this? What's going to happen with this wetland park?" But some of the strong feedback I got way back when we first started this project 20 years ago was to say, "Well, don't put any oak trees up there. I don't want any leaves blowing to my property, you know. And we don't want excess number of more people coming out here." But it turns out now the people who live there come out here daily for their walks. They use this site every day, and it's no issue to them. And as I mentioned, it's a bird watching destination. It's top notch. It's highly regarded. When it first was opened, still true, 20 years ago, they said this is the best place in Palm Beach County to see the most birds in the least amount of time. You know, and so if you run your life very efficiently, it's a good place to go for that. But the fact is, it's so productive and so diverse. People like that. And even now, they keep saying, you know, the neighbors use it several times a week. It's a good place for community fun and education. And there's a few more sites like this. This one is Freedom Park in Naples, Southwest Florida. It's a stormwater park. It takes water from this big watershed over here, feeds into this big pond, and that flows through 3 constructed wetlands before it flows into a restored cypress hammock right on a small river down there. But it's obviously much more than that. They built trails around there that you go biking and hiking on. There's plantings. It's designed to be a bird watching destination as well. Everything looks good. It's maintained in a way that looks like an aesthetic park. This is storm water here, so it's a little lower in nutrient content, but the same principles of habitat layout and design apply. There's been the big pond. They allow fishing, and we're contemplating that here as well, fishing in the big pond from the system.
Catch and release fishing, you might add.
So this one, that's right, you know, and the idea is that it's the fun of fishing versus, right, you know, any kind of a subsistence living there. But the trails themselves down there are designed for running, hiking, bird watching, full nature use. Animals on leashes allowed there, and it's good for the whole multiple generations, you know, older and younger folks. What's interesting about this setting here, this is back in the restored cypress hammock. Now, we might not have that kind of dense growth around the boardwalk, will be more open, but we can imagine the trails that take you through the oaks will kind of reflect that similar kind of experience. On this particular site, these boardwalks are elevated 4 or 5 feet off the ground. Below that, it turns out, wild animals love to use the area underneath this boardwalk. They've had these critter cams that they've used, cameras down there. They take pictures of coyotes and bobcats and animals like that. Right below this, it's almost like two worlds on top of each other there. And that's one of the facts about these kind of projects is that the public becomes you know, values these projects as community spaces, places to have fun and learn. But animals use them too because they're open for they're sheltered. There's not hunting allowed on there. That they have multiple habitats. There's all kinds of features out there, and so there's usually a pretty good chance that people will see birds and wild animals up close. And that's actually one of the points made in this one observation on the web about the Freedom Park project. So the city will have all of these things with this park. I mean, that's our vision here, is that you got a combination of educational facilities built there. We're looking at a new new building, trails with bird watching overlooks and access areas, both open water and emergent habitats for the full range of aquatic species, and boardwalks that people put people in this place, like I said, they don't normally go to on a daily basis, and therefore they can learn and experience something that's on average. And because of this, we are sure that this will be placed on the Great Florida Birding Trail. And that's a good thing, because that's a way to connect to an entire community of birders, thousands of people who will know about this project, besides simply the locals that live nearby. And that, as I mentioned, that typically has an economic benefit. One thing we've seen in these projects, and has been documented elsewhere, is that a well-maintained park has a positive economic impact. The property values go up, the desirability of a site as a destination go up, people will build facilities or access to the site that are similar in nature. You know, this park might beget other parks similar to that. So it's a positive chain of events. So the stepping back, the big picture of this is that why are we doing this? It's to improve the water quality and find a place for the city to safely reuse their effluent by recharging the aquifer, as well as improving the water quality of the aquifer, making sure the water getting to the aquifer is safe and clean, but in a natural way. It is not expensive to treat, and simply does it. It's allowing nature to do the work for us. And so that's really the overview of the park project. And I think the idea is that, given that introduction, we can talk about questions, try to respond to specific issues.
Who's responsible for taking care of the park and monitoring the ecology of it and making sure that it stays in balance?
Right. Well, we can talk about, I think, I can say something about other sites, how they manage it, and other sites, you know.
That's fine.
It's probably just a couple things. One is that usually the utility operates the kind of the infrastructure of it, the water flow, the water control, the water quality aspects of it. Usually a parks department or recreation department will have something to do with the operation of the site, because they kind of serve two different audiences, if you will, two different markets. So what's the...
And I think that we're contemplating a very similar structure here, that we'll take care of all the water influence into water resources. But it hasn't been finalized yet, how that's going to completely operate.
So does that mean that the Parks Department is going to have a large role in it?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
And I think that what we've seen is that, you know, these systems are, as much as they are water, about water, they're substantial areas of land. They're 40 acres, 60 acres in this case. And so because it's a wetland, right, you have to manage both of those aspects of it, you know. So the land management typically is something parks and recreational groups are really more comfortable, or at least more equipped or more familiar with, that have the right kind of staffing for that kind of maintenance.
So we've talked about we're going to visit some of these sites that are already in operation, get their feedback on the challenges they face, what do their operating budgets look like, how is that funded, that sort of thing. So then we'll start to work out how we're going to manage that for the city.
Right. I don't mean to overspeak or presume too much.
No,
right?
That's, you know, I mean, but we don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
It already exists and it works for us, then that's certainly what we'll do.
I think it's really key, you know, with communication, obviously. It's one site, multiple interests and inputs, but, you know, it's best if there's a good level of communication.
Yes, since it will be wet, from a community standpoint, is there a change in the amount of insects in the community, specifically mosquitoes?
Right, mosquitoes. Well, you know, when you make an aquatic habitat, you're creating a habitat that will support mosquitoes and insects. It's what the birds are there to eat, essentially. You know, it's the habitat that's there. But what you're also creating is the opportunity for the animals that eat the mosquitoes to live and thrive there. So what we typically see is that there will be a whole ecosystem built up around these kind of facility sites. If I can find a good example. Yeah. Well, just saying, you know, these kind of habitats here, marshy plants, open water areas, you know, boardwalks overlooking them, you know, it's, you essentially are in the middle of the wetlands, right? But you're also in the area where not only are there mosquitoes, but there's also mosquito predators. Mosquito fish are natural predators for mosquitoes. It's a common approach to managing mosquitoes. Once you have the water in a confined area like this, it's simple enough to add biological controls. There's different kinds of biological larvicides that are applied.
We currently use larvicides in all the retention areas and stuff.
The same approaches.
And we also, since it's part of the city, if it does get bad for some reason, we do spray in the city.
Right.
So we go hit that with the spray and knock it out.
But So
you're putting insecticides in the water that's going into the aquifer.
No, yeah, right now we do larviciding in the retention areas. Yeah. It's a biological, it's like a fungus that eats the larvae of the mosquito. It's not a chemical type pesticide. It's a natural type. And it'll eat the little larvae in the water before they can turn into a mosquito. So we use a lot of those briquettes, and then we have the spraying program that the city does, and they spray right before dark because we don't want to kill bees and all the beneficial insects, so they'll spray for mosquitoes. Usually it's right as it gets dark or whatever, the bees have gone home with the daylight, and then we'll spray.
And then so, at Fort King, we've been using the fish, so we've been experimenting with that a little bit too.
But I don't predict really any extra significance coming up out of the assignment. It's the habitat is there for the mosquitoes and their predators. So they build a whole system that controls itself, that really regulates itself. We have opportunities for management, like you're saying there, too.
We can try the natural stuff, too, like bat houses and things like that, to try to,
These sites typically have martin houses for purple martins or bat houses. And those are good for the adult insects that are flying around in twilight. In the general experience we've had with this site here for 20 years, they don't use artificial controls. They don't use pesticides to control mosquitoes. It's just not an issue. And one of the factors that's interesting about that is this site here takes wastewater that's treated to not treated to quite the extent that your wastewater is treated. This takes more or less what they call secondary treatment. You know, it's not treated to the full advanced wastewater treatment level. And we're going to get water that's better quality than that here. The importance of that is that where you have overloaded systems or systems that are getting a very rich mix, mosquitoes are potentially more of an issue. And they haven't had one here at a more difficult, more challenging water quality. So I just don't really expect to see any significant issues with mosquitoes. If there are, the agency, you know, the utility is poised to respond.
Because I'm sure that would be the first concern of the people living across the streets from it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Reverend Brooks and...
Can you talk to them about timing and funding?
Right.
I can probably answer that question. We're going to finish up our design work in April, May, June timeframe of this year. At the same time, we're looking for funding for this project from various sources, one of which is the St. John's River Water Management District, FDEP, those types of entities. Especially St. John's as a cost-sharing opportunity with those folks. They require that you turn in paperwork at a certain time of the year to kind of apply for that grant funding, and you don't get a notification of award until later on in the year. And that will probably happen, that notification we're hoping by the end of the fiscal year, which is September 30th, October 1st timeframe. We will have heard
you know, how much funding that we're going to be getting from these various entities or agencies. At which time, then, guess what? We get ready to, we'll have a set of plans in hand, and we'll have money in our bank account, and we can go start building this very good project. So at the end of this year, potentially, begin construction. And it's going to take us about a year to construct it.
It's a fascinating project. Any other questions?
So related to that, I know there have been questions about the disc golf course. So you know we will be in conversations with Clark at Pine Oaks Golf Course to see if he wants it to be incorporated into the golf course. Typically when disc golf is played on a golf course, it's played in the rough areas. Plantation is an example of that. I'm not sure if they still have theirs, but it's the very first one I ever saw was on Plantation Golf Course, Plantation Inn over at Crystal River. So we want to offer that to Clark because he currently collects the $1 plus that is paid to play out here, and then he gets revenues off of the golf cart rentals and, of course, concessions and stuff. So we want to offer it to him. If he doesn't want it, then we are going to look at alternate sites. Likely we'll first look at Ocala Regional Sportsplex and or potentially Scott Springs. But we do intend to reestablish that somewhere, and it won't necessarily be as long or intricate a course as it is where it is right now, but we certainly intend to have one. So I didn't want you all to think that we were losing that amenity either. And so I think we're looking for you all to approve the project, make a motion to officially support this project or not support this project.
Motion to support.
I was going to say, okay, motion to support. Anybody want to second that?
Second.
Sounds good. Take a vote.
Take a vote. Ayes?
Aye.
Any nays? I guess we're supporting the project. Great. Right.
Thank you all. Appreciate you coming to do a presentation.
One of the special things about these kind of projects is what to call it, what to name it. You know, so I think something to think down the road is...
Right, is what we're going to name this thing. Yeah.
Because they become destinations, and people like, oh, have you been to so-and-so, such and such a place, you know, so...
Well, the Ocala Recreation Commission Wetlands Park sounds good.
How about something a little more snazzy, but subtitled, sponsored by.
Right, right. Well, even put your name on there.
The AT&T.
There you go.
National championship.
Well, one thing I'll say, just real quickly in closing on that note, is that one of these sites, the Wacotahatchee Wetlands, a name that's unique. You Google Wacotahatchee, there's only one place in the world that is that place, right? So that's a good thing to think about. That originally was called System 3. You know, so System 3 doesn't
really have a brand
new. Plant 3, Plant 4.
System 3,
Is that on Singer Island?
History of that.
No. This is Wacotahatchee is Palm Beach County, west of West Palm a little bit. Northern middle West Palm County.
Who first settled it?
You guys think we ought to create a naming contest?
I think we should research
to the highest bidder.
Do you know what the original?
The council may decide to do something, so we probably need to wait on that.
Do you know what who originally owned the property? Do you know how it came to end up being the city's name?
What, the Pine Oaks?
It was originally a nine-hole.
Yeah.
What was it called then? Do you know?
I think it was Crompton.
Crompton, that's something.
Yeah, I know it was donated, the property was.
Yeah. But City Council has a few people, too, that I think they kind of have in their mind that it's going to be time to name. So that certainly will not be a staff decision. We likely will not even make recommendations because we're smart that way.
The park does have its own website up now on the City of Ocala page, so we're updating on there when things happen and have cool critter really sections so people know what kind of animals they get to see. I kept out the creepy ones.
There's a handout in the back too on the park.
I think that would be great for them to have. Like so as people start asking you all questions.
And then more signs.
But if there's anybody, I'm glad to share. Right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We have those electronically, and then all of those are up on the website if you need access to them.
That was Connie.
I have a question. On the decons, what did it say? The depth of those ponds were. So is there an opportunity for. Can I ask you to ask those things?
I don't think we've done that just yet. I think we're looking at pushing from platforms or boardwalks. I'm not so sure it's going to be quite big enough. I mean, about two paddles.
How is it in comparison to the ponds here, size wise?
To Tuscarora? That bigger pond is much smaller than Tuscarora.
Oh, it is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Tuscarora.
What about the pond on the other side of the street? Do you know how?
It's probably closer to that size, which means that I don't think, it's just a personal opinion. You know, kayaking may be, no one's going to use it because you don't really get a workout.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's I've seen people canoe in smaller setups, but more as like demonstrations, perhaps.
Yeah, we've had those out here. Yeah.
Educational.
Just get some paddle boats.
Believe me, we've done all the research.
I actually can work on that.
Like Lake Eola.
Somebody found one. I think it was Catherine Stewart found one that looked like a yellow rubber duck.
Right.
That's right. She did. Well, thank you all. Thanks, John.
All right, let's continue.
Okay, I'll give you a project update. Couple things. I don't know if you noticed when you came in, but the parking lot, the additional parking lot that we're building to support the symphony is under construction right now.
The trail of that?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It'll take up about half of that property. The other thing, Lillian Bryant's splash pad is well under construction. You want to give an update on when did you say they're gonna pour next week? And what else did Jeff say? That's a big portion of it.
So they've got a schedule.
They've got everything plumbed in underground. Wow. And it's moving pretty quick. Felt like he feels like they're on schedule. So it should be done February, March, and then we won't open it till April. We have some other stuff we're doing. We have a bathroom. The bathroom over there has to be renovated to meet certain requirements. Floor has to be slip resistant, obviously. That needs to be updated for ADA. It has to have changing stations in each one.
It needs to be updated anyway.
Yeah. We're working on all that. And then also we're working on the landscape design because we'll go back in and do that after he's out. So anyways, it's under construction. The Fort King National Historic Landmark, we're waiting on the state's approval. of our management plan revision that went to them at the beginning of December. So as soon as we get their approval, hopefully we can get started with that project. They're still trying to raise funds to pay for the match. They have made a $75,000 contribution to the city already towards that match, so that's about a third of what we need, fourth of what we need. They're working hard at it. And then the, what other projects do we have? The Magnolia Art Exchange, they're still raising funds. That's for the art incubator that we're hoping to put at the train station. And we're moving forward with the contract for design services. We hope to have the design part of that underway shortly. And hopefully we'll start construction on that, I'd say by the beginning of the next fiscal year, if not before. So, and then just other miscellaneous projects, you know, like restroom renovations at 14 Tennis Center for ADA. We have, we're doing one of the on-course restrooms at the golf course to meet ADA. So just those little kind of projects. And at Tom's Park, we are constructing a two-stall restroom. I went by there this morning. That is, you know, it's not totally closed in, but blocks going up. So we also do have another project that I wish I'd have brought a picture. I'll bring it to you next time. But if you get a chance, go by there. It is a stormwater retention area that was constructed to take the excess stormwater that floods State Road 40 over by the golf course. You know how when we get about a 100-year storm, it floods the whole road. So, so there's an intricate pumping system that brings the water over to this new retention area. And the retention area is, if you go down, it's on Northeast 28th Avenue, and if you go down 14th Street, past 25th Avenue, past the Winn-Dixie, take a right on Northeast 28th Avenue, you'll pass one retention area that's just a retention area that has a fence around it, and then the next one you see a berm, and then there's a walking trail going into it. So it's a pretty intricate system with littoral zones, and again, it's supposed to be treating the nitrates that end up in the system, and in the case of a retention area, even worse stuff ends up there because, you know, it's coming off of vehicles. So, but it's got a nice walking trail around it. Depending on how much water they're getting in there, it's got a, looks like a little creek overflow waterfall looking thing. But we're going to be putting a playground in there. We'll put exercise equipment along the trail. And then we're going to put a playground in there on the side that is, that you will see if you turn down the road I told you to turn on. There's some parking spaces. On the other side, you're in neighborhoods. So they will have, it'll just be walk-in from there. We won't have parking spaces on that side. So it's going to work very similar to how Tom's Park does. That on the more industrial side, there's some parking, but on the neighborhood side, there's no parking because that's typically how we treat a neighborhood park. So anyways, if you get a chance, go by there. That was totally funded by the Stormwater Division. And the city's philosophy has been that when we build new retention areas near neighborhoods, that we find a way to incorporate it as a park as well, which is a great way to increase our park infrastructure without money. So they've done a phenomenal job over there. So if you get a chance, run over and look at that. And they will be trying to, that's one that came up on what are we going to name it. So they're looking at how they're going to name that piece of property as well.
So is it finished or it's in construction?
It's not finished. Probably a couple more months at the most. Okay. And it'll be open. The playground might not be in yet when they open it, but they'll go ahead and open the walking trail part. We're just now starting to look at what playground equipment to put in there. And
will you put trees? Because I think they mowed down that whole
area.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of trees in there. Where the playground will go, there's some really, really nice oaks. There is one beautiful pine tree. It's been a long time since I saw a pine tree that humongous. And then a couple really nice oaks. And there's a couple just scrub stuff that needs to come out. And we'll take it out when we put the playground in. But good stuff back where the playground will go. Real nice shade.
Yeah, I think I know where you're talking about. I'll take a better look at it because I'm there like once a week. I'm in that area.
On the north side, I mean on the south side of it, it's there's a subsidized housing community.
Yes.
I forget the name of that one.
Manners, no. It's in the newspaper for
Spring
bad
Manor?
Reasons. Spring it, Manor.
It's
yeah.
changed names. It yes. used to be Spring Manor.
Right.
So whatever it is. So and I know that there's been issues
yeah.
there, but you know, we're all about quality of life changing people's lives, so we'll see what we can do to contribute to it. And then the neighbor, I mean, two different neighborhoods that butt up to it from the east side, so it'll be a nice asset, and especially in a section of town that we don't have a lot of parks. And, you know, this one still is south of 14th, and my big mantra is, we don't have parks north of 14th Street. So, but still, we have a big shortage of neighborhood parks. We have a big shortage of parks, period, in northeast Ocala.
Yeah. And there's a lot of kids that live in that area.
Yep.
So it should get some good use.
Yep. That'll be good.
Yeah.
That's it on projects.
Okay.
Bill's not here for Parks Op, so I will just tell you we're making a little bit of a reorg in our parks division. We have gotten approval to hire a horticulture supervisor. We have planters and landscape areas all throughout our system, including the landscape areas on State Road 40 and then at the gateways at the interstate and then also on Fort King Street. And somehow all those landscape amenities just always seem to take, you know, they take a back burner because there's so many other pressing things. So same with our projects. Some of our projects just, you know, we'll buy the playground equipment to put in at a piece of property, and then it just seems to take us forever. So we felt like by separating those out under four different supervisors, there'll be more accountability and
right.
and the priorities will be for each work group will be clearer.
Good.
So that's happening, and they're just coming off an extremely busy event season. So we run events just about, and not we run them, but we support events just about every night starting at Light Up Ocala until past the new year. So that's been their focus. And so they're looking for, I'm sure they're looking forward to getting back to their normal responsibilities. And that's it on Parks Ops.
Recreation or special services?
Recreation and special services. just to let you know, we have made a selection for the recreation division head.
Okay.
John Spencer is the gentleman's name. And hopefully by February 9th, you'll have the opportunity to meet him at the next Rec Division head meeting. But he comes to us with good qualifications, good experience, feel like he's the right person for the department as a whole.
Is he local?
Not local.
Oh no.
You didn't apply.
Yeah.
You didn't apply.
So when did he meet it?
He will be local. Let me tell you, it's been a long time since I saw someone. Well, first of all, this community has a lot to offer, right? So, and he, although he comes from Pennsylvania, it turns out he comes from a very small town in Pennsylvania. So this is actually a big town for him.
Right.
I was following his Twitter page because he had put on there, pray for me. I'm going for my interview in Ocala. So after we made the offer, I'm watching his page to see is he accepting it, right? So eventually he posts on there, proud to say that I've accepted the position with Ocala as Ocala's new recreation division head. I found my place in Ocala.
Yeah.
And you know, that's our logo, Ocala, find your place. So, and then, you know, hashtag Spencers are moving to Florida. So, and he was looking for a place that he could land that was family oriented. He's got twins that are six and then another 5-year-old on top of that. So he's got a young family, and so we're excited about him coming.
We'll see how he handles the summer.
When you interview in the winter, it's easy to understand why people are interviewing down here, right? Maybe we should interview in the summer.
The humidity.
Junior Magic Basketball, that's starting. I think Kelsey Health Clinic's last week. The numbers are good. I think our goal was 100 plus. And I feel like we're very close to that, not exceeding that. So that program's underway. Upcoming events, we've got RDF, which is February 11th, Saturday, February 11th here. So please try and make that. That's the cattle drive, cowboy roundup. Kathy, you want to talk about the Levitt Grant?
No, but do you want to tell them that the Six Gun people are going to be there for the Cowboy Festival?
Yeah.
You can tell them about it.
I'm Six Gun Territory. Do y'all remember Six Gun Territory?
I had read about it. They do a show or something.
And the can dancers.
Yeah. So they're going to perform there.
Never before.
How fun.
You never went?
You never went?
I tried to go one time because I wanted to see Horse Cartwright. And the traffic was so backed up.
You were a Bonanza fan.
My parents used to go.
You wanted to see Hoss that bad?
She said, we're not going to wait in that.
My parents used to dump us at the front and come back at nighttime to pick us up.
Bonanza fan. The Levitt Grant.
Oh, so the Levitt Grant was approved. I don't know if you followed that, but it was a contest where a certain number of applications were sent in, and then the public voted for the top 15? Mm-hmm. And then they funded, good thing I'm reporting on
top,
this.
Yeah, that's why I asked.
Maybe it was the top 25?
Yeah.
Funded the top 15?
Yeah, I think that's
anyway, we were funded.
We were funded. And so they will be offering 10 concerts at the Martin Luther King Recreation Complex starting in May, and it's consecutive. You have to offer a concert every single week. So it'll be on Friday evenings. And so they're on a search for, halfway decent regional and national acts to try to support that. And then also,
there's a postcard or a save the date card out on the counter, and it indicates that they're looking for organizations that may want to participate in at the concert series.
So now, does she need assistance in finding groups or what?
I don't know how far along she is, but I can find out. Follow up.
And then also we're going to be extending the Movie in the Park program. We're going to offer, we're going to do some at MLK. There were one or two at Lillian Bryant and then at Jervy Gant. So just trying to hit some areas outside of just the downtown central core. While that's important, so is offering programming closer to home. So we're finalizing that lineup. Our special event listing goes in the February, March family time, so we usually try to have that finalized about now.
The stage like they have over there would be real nice.
It would be, and so we looked at that at one point, and we talked about the potential of a multi-purpose recreation center building off of Krosky Rec Center, and somehow designing it to wrap around and bring in the aquatics facility and everything. And the example we looked at was at Winter Park, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They have a stage right off the back of their multi-purpose recreation center. Super nice, and then it opens up into the park. So we were thinking that would be the long-term solution. We have the mobile stage, and we'll bring the mobile stage out for those events. But
who's seen the mobile stage?
same stage they use every year?
No. We get a new...
They got a different...
It's a big semi-truck.
Yeah.
And you push a button and it unfolds.
Like the Budweiser stage.
It's a beautiful thing.
So if you haven't seen it...
It doesn't say Budweiser.
Ocala, find your place. They're using it for the MLK event.
Monday. That's right.
On the 16th.
So if you go out there, you see it.
Yeah, they're they've got some good entertainment. One of the groups played for Jazz on the Green last year, and the cat downstairs. So they'll be using the stage.
The stage is super nice. It opens up on one side. It opens, the stage opens out, and then the top comes up, and it has lighting systems up there that shine back in. It also has audio visual if you want to, you know, put a projector on it. It's got a screen. Yeah, all self-contained. So if you have to take it somewhere where there's no power, it has a very quiet generator that so it'll run itself.
That's good.
So yeah, it's got a sound system built right in it. If it's a larger act, obviously they're going to need more sound than our system provides. But they're going to need more stage too.
Yeah.
So anyways, back to the permanent stage. It's the city manager definitely has that in his mind that we need a long-term solution. I don't think that they'll try to proceed with a rec, multi-purpose rec center at that site. I think they're looking more at where the Royal Oaks was potentially long-term. So, and that's all tied in with CRA planning and that sort of thing. So long-term, I think we'll have a solution. But in the interim, we do have a stage that's a little nicer than the aluminum pull behind. Yeah,
that little thing. It was too small. Nice. We couldn't use it.
This one's super sharp.
Yeah.
So.
Other than that, we've got staff is, believe it or not, gearing up for summer programs. Starting to have those conversations, look at hiring and so forth for our seasonal staff. The dinosaur exhibit is leaving us, but we'll have the, it's Space in Flight? Space in Flight is the next exhibit?
Something like that.
Yeah. That transfers.
There's two of them there.
Transfers February 11th, the same day as RDF. So, yeah, I think that's it. That's all I have.
Well, I will say under special services, just to let you know, Melissa Townsend, our community cultural arts manager, has resigned. She's going to be with us through April. She's decided to go into the real estate business. So she does still intend to be heavily involved in cultural arts in the community. She's will stay very involved with the MAX group. That's kind of her baby, helping to develop that art incubator. So we have some other movement in that arena. So we got approval from the city manager's office to backfill her position with the cultural arts division head. That position will oversee both the cultural arts program and the Discovery Center. Those, it's pretty common to have those types of facilities under one umbrella. So we'll be posting that position, and then we're gonna have a division head, but then we're also gonna fill a cultural arts supervisor, which is a lower grade than a manager. So just trying to get better efficiencies, and as the cultural arts program continues to grow, and it just grows by leaps and bounds, it gets those resources allocated. And then, it seemed like there was something else in that regard.
Marketing manager?
Oh, we do have a position posted. Did it post today?
I think she said tomorrow morning she's going to get it done. Adding the testing. So
yeah.
Tomorrow.
A marketing manager position. We had a position open. We got permission to convert that to a marketing manager. Our marketing is heavy on print marketing at this point, and we really need someone who understands the technology and has the time to coordinate that. Even in our department, we do our own website upgrades. We just went to a new website. That's been very time consuming. Unlike a lot of city departments, every city department has content that changes, but our content changes daily. And so it literally is a full-time job just keeping up with the website and social media. And so we're looking at, we'll still have our marketing coordinator that will assist that person, but we'll be able to hopefully invest less in print marketing and more in electronic marketing. So we have some other tools available to us that just nobody's had the time to really research it and capitalize on it. We have, you know, thousands and thousands of emails in our registration system that if somebody could figure out how to do mass email marketing through it, you know, we could hit send and it would send it to all those people. So it's just that kind of thing. It takes somebody having the time to really understand it and work through it.
On the park side, two new rangers, and we had Ranger of the Year and Supervisor of the Year at the Ranger Institute.
Yeah.
So Brian McKay was Park Ranger Supervisor of the Year, and Troy Warrenka was Ranger of the Year.
Yeah.
And we've hired two new rangers, so local.
Local people. And just so you know, our ranger, the focus of our hiring, understanding what's coming with the wetlands park, we're looking less enforcement, law enforcement background, and more interpretive ranger. Obviously enforcing park rules is very important, but we also need rangers that can handle that programming side of things. So at understanding that that's coming, we'll use those opportunities to try to fill with people who can handle that as we grow in that area. So,
do you still have the ranger program for children?
Junior ranger?
We haven't, but we are there. So Bill, the parks division head, you know, he was a park ranger with the National Park Service for years. So that's what he did, interpretive ranger programs. So his focus with the rangers is programming. So you're going to see a lot more of that. They started last summer with the Reading with the Ranger program. So, and they have talked about junior ranger programs. And so you're going to see more programs from the park rangers.
That would be nice. Okay. How about comments from the board members? Anything exciting for 2017? Okay. Anybody would like to make a motion to adjourn?
I would make a motion that we adjourn this
and
thing.
And a second?
I'll second.
And do we vote on this?
Well, everyone not in favor, stay.
We'll be here until 9.
No.